Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. This is your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Mr. Tim Dennis. How are you, Timmy?
Doing all right.
Good. Well, we've got another amazing show. We've got a great topic coming up. I hesitate to call it a great topic. I mean, it's a great book that's out and an interesting topic about a, I don't know, how do you bring this about? It's satanic crimes. But it's something that we haven't really covered before on the show, and I wanted to delve a little bit more into. The name of the book is called Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium. And from the information that was sent to me prior, it was certainly interesting. There's a lot to look into with this. Our guest is William H. Kennedy. He's the author of this book. And let's just, you know, again, this is one of those, how do you skate on this nicely, Tim? This isn't a friendly topic or a, hey, we're going to talk about satanic crime right after this. It's not one of those kind of deals. This is one that you take a little bit more seriously, but it's certainly a reality of the world. And I think in the place that we're at right now with the paranormal at such an all-time high and an exploration of things outside of the normal, it seems to me, and maybe Mr. Kennedy can shed more light on this for us. Bill, do you think that satanic crimes and the look to the dark side is getting bigger at this point in history than it has in the past?
Oh, sure it does. I just want to say thank you for having me on, Dave and Tim. I really like Darkness Radio a lot.
Oh, thank you.
And
well, it's our pleasure.
For a topic like this, the name of your show is just like perfect, I think.
Exactly.
You know, this isn't the Barney Hour or something like that.
It isn't?
So, no, you get into some hard topics here. But, right, my book is called Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium. And what the book basically does is the first chapter is called A Brief History of Modern Satanism. And that covers the Satanist movement from 1875 up till, 2006. And 1875 was the birth of Aleister Crowley, who's really kind of the grandfather of modern Satanism. And I cover all the major Satanists in the first chapter, like Anton LaVey, Kenneth Anger, all of them right down the line, Shane Bugbee, Boyd Rice. I get into all the contemporary Satanists and what they're doing. And the remainder of the book are cases of serial killers who are also Satanists, and the final chapter of the book is about satanic organizations amongst elite, like the Skull and Bones, Bohemian Grove, and Bilderberg Group. So my book, Satanic Crime, is the most comprehensive book on Satanism on the market, and, Brad Steiger wrote the back cover blurb for my book, and he was very kind in that he asked me to write the back cover blurb for the reissue of his book, Atlantis Rising, as a result of this. So my book's won a lot of critical acclaim and respect for me, which I'm very, very serendipitous about. I'm very happy about that, although my subject matter, as you mentioned earlier, isn't all that cheery. But that's basically it. It looks at serial killers who are also Satanists.
Well, why don't you, can you start at the beginning? Give us some background on the Satanist movement. You said that it kind of follows it from the 1800s.
Right. Well, contemporary Satanism can be traced to one man, Aleister Crowley, who lived from 1875 until 1947. And what Crowley basically did is, when you look at all these contemporary groups, many of them link back to Crowley. So I'll just quickly give a run of his life. He was born, as I said, in England in 1875, and his father was a rich brewer. He went to Cambridge University and studied literature, but he dropped out so he could spend all of his time studying ritual magic. He became a 33rd degree Freemason. He joined the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, and he also joined a third group called the Ordo Templi Orientis, which was founded by a guy named Theodore Royce in Germany. So Crowley joined all these fringe masonry and occult groups around 1900, and then he asserted himself as a Satanist. He began calling himself the Great Beast 666. He had his followers worship him as both Jesus and as Satan in very bizarre rituals. He went to Sicily, and Mussolini threw him out of Sicily in the 20s because he was having ritual orgies that included bestiality, and he let young children, like 3, 4, 5 years old, actually watch sex between humans and animals. Pretty horrible thing. Now, Crowley, after that, the rest of his life, he wrote and lived very modestly, and he died a penniless heroin addict in 1947. But his influence is immense in that, when you consider that the Wicca movement was really a spin-off of Crowley, in that Gerald Gardner, who coined the phrase Wicca, a neo-religion concerning witchcraft, he got most of his rituals from Crowley's Gnostic Mass. So the whole Wicca movement, you see right down the line, Sybil Leake and Alex Sanders and Janet Farrar, all these contemporary Wiccans, they may not even realize it or like to admit it, but they're Crowleyites as much as they are, you know, earth worshippers. And there's even a lot of hexing and curses within the Wicca movement you don't hear a lot about. But Crowley was influential there. Now, Crowley was also the Rosicrucian group out in San Jose, California, a morgue, was actually founded off an OTO charter, and Aleister Crowley tried to once take over that organization. He was going to sue H. Spencer Lewis because a lot of their rituals were rituals that he inspired. And, you know, right down the line, all these different weird cults, Scientology has a direct link to Aleister Crowley, in that L. Ron Hubbard studied with Jack Parsons, who was Crowley's number one U.S. Representative. So when you look at how incredibly, you know, influential Aleister Crowley is, most people haven't heard his name. You know, he's impacted pop culture. He's on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. But where Crowley gets kind of sinister is that he, one of his spin-off groups, after he died in 47, there was a branch of the OTO, the Ordo Templi Orientis, out in Berkeley, California, and who joined that group, or was affiliated with them anyway, was a young Anton LaVey and a young Kenneth Anger. They were originally Crowleyites, and they went on to found the Church of Satan in 1966, and Anton LaVey wrote the Satanic Bible in 1969. He eventually died in 1997, but he's probably the most influential and well-known Satanist I write about in the book. And even he was tied in with a lot of very shady characters, like Bobby Beausoleil and Susan Atkins, who were two of Manson's followers who were sent to prison for a murder, were Church of Satan members before they hooked up with Manson. Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, who was the serial killer in the mid-80s, before he went on his killing spree, he spent a week in San Francisco with Anton LaVey and performed all these rituals, then he left and he went on this murderous spree. Now, when he was being tried for murder and, you know, the rape of old people and children, Zena LaVey, Anton LaVey's daughter, actually showed up at his trial She was sitting there in the audience. I've had that confirmed by several people. So when you look at the Church of Satan, which pretty much claims to be a harmless group, when you look at some of the people connected with them, they're pretty horrible.
Yeah, I would say. Now, but with Anton LaVey, and actually, isn't Anton LaVey considered kind of the founder of the Church of Satan at this point?
Oh, yeah, he founded it. Excuse me. As I said, in 1966, he founded the Church of Satan in San Francisco. And he started to have followers come to his house. And some of these followers turned out to be serial killers, tragically enough.
Now, what exactly is Satanism, though? I mean, are they leaning on Satan like Christians do on Jesus Christ and God? Is Satan, you know, I mean, we actually had correspondence a while back from somebody from the Church of Satan, and they were claiming that, you know, they get a bum rap because of the word Satan in their business, and that they're not all about evil and out, you know, wanting people to die and do this. They said they're a pretty passive group. You know, they have their own belief systems. They're no worse than any other religion and so on and so forth. What do you know to be true of Satanism?
Okay, well, you know, I'm not saying every Satanist is a serial killer.
Right.
Or a potential serial killer. I never said that. What I will say is one thing about these Church of Satan people, they never give you a lot of hard facts about their organization. For example, in 1995, there was a fellow named Joe Fiorella who out in Northern California, he was a card-carrying Church of Satan member, and so was his best friend. And what these two card-carrying members of the Church of Satan did is they ordered a ritual knife off of Maledicta, which was one of the early Satanism web pages back in 1995. And they got a ritual knife, and they murdered a 15-year-old girl named Elise Pollard and had sex with her, you know, dead body. You know, it was necrophilia. Now, when Joe Fiorella and his buddy were arrested, they had Church of Satan cards right on them, you know. So the Church of Satan, as I say, the vast majority of the membership and people who claim to be Satanists, you know, if they don't perform any crimes or do anything wrong, I really don't care who or what they worship.
Right.
But when I see some of these spinoff things like Joe Fiorella, and then they won't take responsibility for, you know, promoting some very, very harsh ideas about selfishness. And on that Maledicta website I mentioned earlier that Joe Fiorella went on, there was more or less a quote from Anton LaVey, who was alive at the time, telling people to go out and kill other people. So when you're putting out messages like this, and then when the press comes to you, you don't acknowledge any of these you know, most heinous things that are part of your religion. And I do this myself. I'm a Catholic. The name of my other book is called Lucifer's Lodge, Satanic Ritual Abuse in the Catholic Church. So I'm highly critical of my own church. And I think people, in a sense, should put the worst foot forward. Now, the thing about Satanism, you have to remember, David, Tim, is there's three kinds of Satanists. There are theistic Satanists who worship the devil as a real metaphysical being. There are atheistic Satanists who worship the devil as a metaphor for rebellion. And there are auto-theistic Satanists, Satanists who use Lucifer as a metaphor to worship themselves individually. They try and turn themselves into a god. And the Church of Satan is primarily an atheistic form of Satanism. But there's two things about it. There's a contempt for Christianity, number one, and there is a definite underlying malfeasance towards other human beings. It's a very survival of the fittest mentality, and the weak should suffer. They deserve to suffer. It's part of the national order. Anton LaVey incorporated a lot of Nazi rituals. He got right from the SS into the Church of Satan. That's, you know, that's not a very nice thing either. And like I say, it's not an organization I particularly like. But, you know, if a person wants to dress in black and wear pentagrams and worship Satan and they don't bother anyone, all power to them. This is a free country. That's really not what I'm looking at in my book. And the ironic thing is, Dave and Tim, is that Satanists actually love my webpage and love my book. You know, I don't get any hostility from the Satanist community, which really surprises me. I get emails of support almost every day for the different things I'm doing in Satanism. So, ironically enough, a huge part of my readership are Satanists, are Wiccans, are occultists themselves.
Now, you've mentioned Wicca a couple times. I thought Wicca is a pretty passive deal. It's all about Earth Goddess and healing and health, and you've made a mention a few times that there's a darker side to it.
Well, there's
a darker side of every religion. I understand that, even Catholicism and Christianity.
Sure. There's a downside to everything, and I think it's imperative, even with my own religion, to look at the worst, put the worst foot forward, let people know what they're getting into. You know, if someone wants to convert to Roman Catholicism, give them a lot of information about the priest pedophile crisis. You know, that's
right.
The first thing you should do. Okay, here's the worst of what we have to offer. We're not hiding anything.
Right.
So if you get involved with us, you know, you can expect such and such. This has happened to other, you know, children have been raped by priests. That's how you go about it. And I think Satanists should be more like that. You know, we have this philosophy, but Richard Ramirez took it the wrong way. We have this way of life, but, you know, Susan Atkins took it the wrong way. So I think that's very, very important. I do it with my own religion, and I think it's important to do that. Now, with Wicca, to get back with what you're asking, number one, Wicca was formulated by a guy named Gerald Gardner round about the mid-1930s. He really gave shape to the various neo-pagan groups that were around before then. Now, what he did is he started to formulate various Wicca covens, and as I said earlier, he went to Aleister Crowley and borrowed a lot of Crowley's rituals from the Gnostic Mass, which is this kind of pagan occult mass that Crowley had developed many years before. The first three initiations, the words are virtually simultaneous between Gardner and Crowley's OTO Gnostic Mass ritual. And the big thing you have to remember is that initially Gerald Gardner founded a bisexual cult. Now, it did involve sex between men and orgiastic type things, you know, and I don't have too much of a problem with that, with consenting adults, again, if that's what they want to do. But all this talk of, you know, Mother Nature and Earth worship and preserving the Earth, the dark side of Wicca comes with the hexing and cursing that is part of it. It's actually a form of black magic. You petition a metaphysical agent to do harm against another human being. That's the technical definition of black magic. You call upon the spirit world to do harm to another human being. And Wiccans do this. Now, Gerald Gardner had a whole slew of curses against people, death curses and everything else. Sybil Leek, who was the great popularizer of witchcraft in the 1960s, she was a kind of counterculture figure. She wrote a book of curses, Sybil Leek's Book of Curses. And a lot of this occultism was just an excuse to have orgies, really. And
damn it, Tim, we're starting our own cult.
I know.
You All guys right. should, you know. It's a nice way, it's an easy way to meet girls, you know, it really, really is. You know, start a Wicca cult. But as I say, it's not, excuse me, it's not as, you know, earth-worshipping and laissez-faire as they say. There's a dark undercurrent to it. And there have also been Wiccans involved with, you know, I live in Massachusetts. I keep an eye on the Salem Wiccans up here.
Mm-hmm.
And take Laurie Cabot, who's kind of the queen
of
the Salem witches. You must have heard of her.
Oh, sure.
Seen her on TV.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I have this on my webpage at williamhkennedy.com. You talk about nature worship and respect for the earth and life. Laurie Cabot threatened her roommate, held a gun to her head, and threatened to kill her. And this woman went to the Salem police and turned her in, and Laurie Cabot got her gun license taken away. Okay? Laurie Cabot, the police came to get her grandchild away from her daughter because of a custody battle. There was accusations of child neglect. Laurie Cabot put a hex on the Salem police. She cursed them. So when you really, you know, look up close at these people, this outer thing of this Mother Nature and, you know, live in harmony with the earth, these people don't practice it. Laurie Cabot also sent out voodoo dolls to the woman who testified against her. So you see some very harsh things here. You know, it's not all lighthearted.
Well, right. And as we said, though, I mean, there's people that take extremes on every religion, it seems, and twist it to what they want. And she seems to live the life more of the cuckoo kind of witch that, you know, we've read about in fairy tales than she does the reality of what most of the people I know in the Wiccan culture believe in.
Well, I'm just, as I say, I'm pointing out what the leadership of this movement is like. I mean, these are
now, is that really considered a leadership, or is it just because they're the most outspoken? You know, I mean,
well, when you think of Wicca, there's only four or five people that pop in your mind, let's face it. Janet Farrar.
I don't know. I have a couple of ex-wives that I think were big in the witchcraft.
Well, right. I mean, they're probably flying around doing evil to good people as we speak. But, no, I mean, when you look at the leadership, I mean, you got to expect to be scrutinized, you know, when you go in there, when you say anything publicly. So the leadership of this movement, the top people, they really don't live that, you know, nurturing, you know, live in harmony with nature, New Age kind of philosophy. They're very selfish, very sexual people. Now, I even have on my witchcraft multimedia page, on my webpage, I have a witchcraft multimedia page, and you can see film clips of Alex Saunders doing very, very strange sex rituals, and I should point out this is for a mature audience. It's from a film he did in 1970, a documentary called Lost Eden, which was one of the first films on the Wicca movement. And you can see another film where Alex Saunders claims to have had sex with his grandmother. So, nice. You know, these people, you know, when you look at them, they don't seem to be playing with a full deck. You know, quite frankly,
I'll let them know that you said that, not me.
Okay,
with
that's
that,
all right.
People can check out your website at WilliamFKennedy.com. Or William H.
William
F. Macy is, I think, what I was thinking, right?
William H. Kennedy.
William H. Kennedy is your website. They can check it out, WilliamHKennedy.com. Bill, hang with us. We're going to be right back. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Director's log. I can't believe I'm with these Darkness Radio dorks again. It's like having bamboo shoved underneath my fingernails. Please, somebody shoot me.
Don't you dare move. There's more to come from the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis. The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the seven bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to the Darkness, or whatever is hanging in the air, on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the show. We're speaking to Mr. Bill Kennedy about his book, Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium. The first part of the show, we spent learning a little bit about Satanism and about satanic rituals and groups and organizations. Let's talk now, delve into some of the cases that you studied throughout this book. You said you covered some of the Charles Manson, Son of Sam, Night Stalker stuff. Was Charles Manson a Satanist, or was he involved in it, or were you just talking about Susan that was part of his group that was kind of a bad seed and into Satanism?
Charles Manson was definitely a Satanist, and just to give a brief breakdown of him, Manson's mother was a prostitute, and he found himself in and out of various jails and reform schools from the age of 12 till he got out of prison at the age of 32. And while he was in prison, Charles Manson studied Scientology, and he also took a lot of courses in, like, Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. So that's really where...
I always knew Scientologists and Dale Carnegie were evil.
Well, you know, as I say, Manson for someone in jail, things like that might actually help them if they want to make good.
Right.
But let's face it, Manson took Carnegie's book and turned into How to Win Friends and Get Them to Kill People.
Yeah.
So, you know, in that sense, it's how you use things. That's where he got the skills. Remember, the first person he recruited was a librarian at Berkeley, at UC Berkeley. So Manson certainly got social skills from things like Dale Carnegie and the Church of Scientology, which helped him to manipulate people who are of a higher class than himself. So, you know, his prison reform actually warped him, and he actually begged not to be released. He wanted to stay in prison, which a few people know. He didn't think he could make it on the outside, and they let him go anyway, and the rest is history. But his involvement with Satanism came pretty quick after he got out of prison, in that he hooked up with the Process Church of the Final Judgment, which was a satanic group started by Robert Moore de Grimston in England, who was another ex-Scientologist who formed his own Satan group, wherein he was worshipped there again, like Crowley, as a personification of Jesus and as a personification of Satan. Now, Charles Manson wrote an article for the Process magazine, which was a magazine that the Process Church of the Final Judgment used to hand out in Haight-Ashbury. And the family lived a couple doors down from the Process Church people, and they distributed some of these magazines for this Satanist church. As I said, Susan Atkins and Bobby Beausoleil were Church of Satan members before this. Susan Atkins has also stated that Aleister Crowley was a big influence on Manson, and he talked about that quite a bit. Now, as I said, Charles Manson was one of these, you'd call him an autotheistic Satanist. They worship themselves, and they want other people to worship them. Now, what Charlie used to do is he would have his followers worship him as Lucifer, and he would also reenact the crucifixion and have them worship him as Jesus as well. So these kooky autotheistic Satanists can turn out to be the most dangerous. Now, it's very strange. Susan Atkins was a stripper in Anton LaVey's Topless Witches Review, which is a strip show that LaVey did in the mid-60s, right after he formed the Church of Satan.
I also hear it's coming to Vegas, Bill.
Oh, yeah, it probably is. But what Susan Atkins did in the strip show is she emerged from a coffin as a vampiress without any clothes on, and she had a big red fingernail, and she would lick
Okay, Bill, can you just start saying that again very slowly for me?
Very slowly, okay. I don't mean to. She was an attractive girl in her day. I don't deny it. But consider, now, here's the downside. 2 years later, she was licking the blood of Sharon Tate off of her fingers after the famous Tate-LaBianca murders. So the Church of Satan, for her, was kind of a warm-up to actual vampirism, which is, you know, a very, very strange thing. You know, she went from that fingernail to licking the blood of a pregnant woman off her finger. Yeah. So, you know, this is another thing that they don't tell you on the Church of Satan website. There are these very bad spin-off kind of things. Now, Manson himself, throughout his trial, kept saying that he was Satan and Jesus and everything in between. And that's a very common trait of these autotheistic Satanists. That Crowley did that. That goes back actually to the Hellfire Club back in the mid-1700s. They did a similar thing in their club as well, where their leader Dashwood was Jesus, and he picked 12 disciples out of his Satanist followers. So this goes back in Satanism quite a way back, by the way. And just to sum up, yes, Charles Manson was definitely a Satanist by every definition of a Satanist.
Now, you know, we actually had on the show earlier, I think it was last year, right, Tim? We had on Chip Coffey talking about the murder of John Lennon. And Chip, of course, is a good friend of our show and host of Psychic Kids on the A&E Network. And he was talking about Mark David Chapman and the fact that Chapman claimed to have been possessed at some point, and that there may actually be some credibility toward it. And did you do any research into Mark David Chapman's story at all? I know he wasn't a serial killer.
I didn't satanic crime, but I'm actually writing another book. This is strange synchronicity, and I'm starting it in September. It's called The Beatles and the Occult.
Gotcha.
Where I look at the Beatles from the perspective of occult practices. And I just looked through that section in the book All You Need Is Love by Peter Brown, which is the most definitive book about the Beatles out there. And Peter Brown's book says that Chapman definitely thought he was possessed by demons, and he actually had a kind of exorcism in prison where these spirits kind of shot out of him all at once. It looked like the guards thought he was having an epileptic fit, and he claimed that he was going through a process of diabolical expulsion. These demons were leaving his body. This is his testimony now. There again, Mark David Chapman was someone who worshipped both God and Satan. On the day he murdered Lennon, he called upon Satan to give him strength to do it. So he was kind of a very individual practitioner type Satanist. But he was definitely a Satanist, Mark David Chapman. What I'm going to bring out in my book, The Beatles and the Occult, also is that John Lennon was an incredibly, incredibly superstitious man. And he and Yoko Ono used to hire psychics and tarot card readers and astrologers. They had a whole crew of them. And they would advise John and Yoko over where John should be when, as to avoid getting assassinated. He was paranoid of getting assassinated, John Lennon. And he would actually take these feng shui-type trips. You know, these advisors would say that, you know, the Caribbean would be safe for you for a month, or Hawaii would be safe for you for 3 weeks. And they pick these spots through these divinations. So, strangely enough, John Lennon was playing a kind of metaphysical cat and mouse game with, you know, some of these other people who were under the occult, like Mark David Chapman. And, of course, you really can't hide from someone that determined to kill you. And that's what Chapman did, you know, on that horrible day, which I remember.
Well, you'll definitely have to reach out to Chip as you're doing this, because he actually is friends with a lady who was very close to Mark David Chapman. He used to come over and hang out with her kids. She was, I think he was like their camp counselor. Wasn't that it, Tim?
Yeah.
And he became very close to her family. And as we discussed on our show, and for people that are interested, you can check our archives. Tim, maybe you can look that up for us and find out what the date was on that. But there's really an interesting story to that, and I actually shed a little light on that for her. He showed up just before he assassinated Lennon back on their property, looking for the family, and I had often wondered if maybe they were part of his plot to, you know, be a part of this to kill them as well.
Or even to go a little bit further, to slay the family in some sort of satanic ritual in order to continue on and gain his power to kill Lennon.
Yeah, so there was, you know, we talked of that. So that would definitely recommend, if you get a chance to talk to them.
Sure, email me his address. I'd really appreciate it, guys.
Sure, not a problem.
I'm starting that book in September. You read my mind or something.
See how
it's really bizarre. The guy who tried to stab George Harrison to death, who broke into his house.
Right.
That, when you look at the details of that, that's very, very weird, because he thought the Beatles were actually casting witchcraft spells into his mind from their music. And when he went to Harrison's house, he hopped over the fence, and he actually smashed a statue of St. George, the dragon slayer.
Right.
And he threw this chunk of this cement angel's wing through the window to get into the place. Now, George Harrison and his wife were upstairs, and why George Harrison went out to see what was going on was because his mother-in-law was three bedrooms down, and she was very sick, and her door wasn't locked. So if George Harrison and his wife were alone there, they normally would have locked the door and just called security. But George Harrison, you know, he was a tough Liverpool kid,
right?
You know? He had guts. He wasn't going to let his mother-in-law certainly get harmed by some nut. So he went out to confront him. And what George Harrison did to confuse him is he started saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, which further infuriated this nut. And he stabbed George Harrison, and George Harrison's lung actually collapsed.
Right.
And he survived that. Now, what I just read the other day, which shocked me, that fellow whose name has slipped my mind, he's free. He was sent to a mental home, and then he was allowed to go free.
Right.
He nearly killed George Harrison. But when you look at the Beatles, even things like Lennon's assassination and the attempted assassination of George Harrison, the occult undertones are all there. You know, it's like you can't get away from them when you're dealing with the Beatles. All this occultism is right below the surface. Even throwing the angel's wing through the window is a very odd, you know, it's just strange. It's a strange fact. But I'll be bringing this out in my Beatles in the occult book.
And what's so strange to me is that the Beatles would be so tightly tied to the occult. I would have thought it had been the Archies.
Well, you know, sugar, Jughead has kind of a mean look on his face.
He does. You can't trust
Jughead,
him.
I don't trust that. Never trusted Jughead. Anyone who has a grin like that, there's something wrong underneath.
I always thought Reggie was an angel of God.
That's okay. That's all right.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about some of the other cases in there. Who did you find to be the most frightening case, the most frightening person that seemed to have really immersed themselves into this demonic realm?
Boy, that, excuse me, I got a little head cold today. I actually took some NyQuil before the show, so I'm feeling a bit of a buzz.
Oh,
so did we, coincidentally. So, yeah, we're all buzzing together.
We're highballing on some NyQuil.
I'm feeling good at the moment. So I apologize for the coughing.
No, that's fine.
But just to get back to our grim topic, that's really hard to say. You know, it's really difficult. There's so many wackos in my book that it's really tough. I mean, Richard Ramirez used to rape little children because he knew it was the worst thing he could do to them.
Mm-hmm.
It was worse than murder. He knew that. He thought that out in his mind. He said, well, if you kill a kid, then their suffering's over. But if you rape a kid, their suffering has just begun. So that was one of the more, you know,
evil,
deranged
twisted,
things
right.
in this. You know? But there's so many in this book. I mean, I guess the person who scared me the most was a fellow from Belgium named Marc Dutroux. And my book, Satanic Crime, is the first book to link global elites in these secret societies to serial killers and Satanism. And just to break down real quick, Marc Dutroux was arrested in the mid-90s for kidnapping children. And what he was doing is he was holding them in his basement, and he was selling them to rich elite pedophile rings in Europe, which involves some of the, you know, major leaders in Belgium and Europe generally. Now, what happened is when Dutroux got arrested, it turns out that he had four accomplices. And what the judge did over there, a judge named Judge Connor Rode, judges in Europe can call for more investigations in a case. It's very different from here in the States where, excuse me, what evidence you get is presented that day and the judge makes their decision. In Europe, it's different. A judge can say, well, we'll have to look into this case more. We need more investigation. What happened is he called for anyone to come forward who was abused by Marc Dutroux, and 10 women came forward and said they were raped in Dutroux's bizarre sex cult, and they started to name names of people who were involved with the sex cult, and that includes King Albert of Belgium, that includes Willy Claus, the former Secretary General of NATO, and both those men are also Bilderberg members, the Bilderberg Group, which is a group of rich people who meet in Europe every year. It was started in 1954. It was at the Bilderberg Hotel in Europe. And all of these super rich elite meet once a year at this secret private meeting. And what we're discovering now is many of these same people who go to these meetings, like King Albert and Billy Klaus, were also involved with Mark Dutroux's pedophile ring. Dutroux, by the way, he's been very undercovered by the media in the United States. He's the Charles Manson of Europe. And what happened, I was living in England in 1996 when Dutroux was sentenced, and they actually had a big march in Brussels called the White March. It was the biggest protest in history. Between 350 and 400,000 people came to central Brussels dressed in white to protest the Mark Dutroux case and how the court started to throw out the investigations into the elite pedophiles being involved with Mark Dutroux. Now, a detective named George Marnay started to investigate this pedophile ring, and what he discovered was that these rich groups would meet at various castles throughout Europe, and they would have ceremonies like you would see in Stanley Kubrick's film Eyes Wide Shut.
Right.
You know, those kind of very bizarre sex Satanist rituals. And I'm also told that Stanley Kubrick was once invited to one of these. I haven't been able to confirm it, but that's where he got the idea for Eyes Wide Shut. And Mark Dutroux is currently in prison. Now, Mark Dutroux claims to be a Satanist, and he claims that his pedophile network were Satanists as well. And he has confirmed that people like Billy Klaus were at these bizarre orgies. Now, just to tell you who Billy Klaus is, Billy Klaus was the Secretary of State, and he's personally responsible for the Rwandan genocide. He's the one who withdrew Belgian troops from Rwanda and requested that the UN not aid any of the Tutsis who were being massacred by the Hutu tribe down there. It was inappropriate decolonization, but Billy Klaus was behind that. Billy Klaus was made the Secretary General of NATO, and he was forced to resign because he was taking bribes from a helicopter company. And Billy Klaus now, it's very strange. I have this right on my Satanic Crime multimedia page at williamhkennedy.com. Billy Klaus, who is now in his 70s, did a satanic-type television commercial for Limbomania, which is a heavy metal rock concert in Belgium. And it's a really bizarre thing. Take a look at it. It's at the Satanic Crime multimedia page in the Bilderberg section at williamhkennedy.com. He does a devil summoning ritual. So when you add all these bizarre things up, the fact that, you know, he was accused of being involved in a satanic conspiracy to rape children, and then all these other horrible things happen to him, or he does all these horrible things, and to top off his career, he does a more or less Satanist television commercial. So I guess, as I say, the case of Mark Dutroux is the most disturbing because you see it tied in with world leaders.
Understanding. Well, we got to take our second break here. Stick with us, Bill. We'll be right back with more and more Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, when she moves, she moves.
Thank you.
Wasted by the way.
Thank you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
He looks good at natural run, Roger.
Okay, each of you youngins take a gun, a beer, and some smoke.
Throttle, circuit breakers in. We have separation. Inboard and outboard, they're on. We're coming forward with the side stick.
Looks good.
Roger. I've got a blowout, neighbor three. Get your pitch to zero. Pitch is out, I can't hold altitude. Direction, alpha mode is off. Trip selected, emergency. Flight calm, I can't hold it, she's breaking up, she's breaking.
Dave.
You bastard!
Dave Schrader, paranormal host.
A man barely alive. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic
paranormal host. Dave Schrader
will be that man. Better than he was before.
What is it that makes you set...
Better. Stronger. Faster.
Run, Forrest, run! Run, Forrest!
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
And welcome back to the show. You're listening to Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We're talking to author William H. Kennedy on his book, Satanic Crime, A Threat in the New Millennium. Now, Bill, is that book out and available right now for everybody to get?
Yeah, you can get it at williamhkennedy.com, or you can get it on amazon.com, or you can get it on radioliberty.com. But I really encourage people. I also set up a corresponding multimedia page. I took all the best documentary films from YouTube and Google, and I organized them in my Satanic Crime multimedia page. So if you read the section about Aleister Crowley, you can go to the multimedia page and watch a one-hour documentary on Crowley hosted by Colin Wilson. If you read the section on Anton LaVey, you can then go to the multimedia section and watch a one-hour documentary on the career of Anton LaVey and so on, down with all these cases I have. So what I've really strived to do is pull this material together in a concise fashion and also have some films and other things to back up what I'm saying. And, you know, when you read the book and watch the film, there's a synergy to it, and you get a really, really great understanding of the contemporary Satanism movement by, you know, combining things, reading and watching a film. And that's what makes my book distinct from all others on this subject.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left in the show. Tim, did you have a question, or were you just signaling me from across the board?
Just winking at you, big fella.
I can't blame you. I'm a cute man. Bill, talk to us a little bit more about some of the more staggering facts you found while researching this book. And did you have any fear? I know you mentioned that a lot of Satanists are digging on you and loving the book, but have you had any fear of repercussions from the Manson family or, you know, people that are out still involved in this field, maybe making life hell for you later on?
Not really, because once I've written about it, it's already pretty much been covered by other people. You know, I'm a dot connector and a consolidator of other people's research. So I'd be, you know, there'd be five people in line in front of me they'd want to get at before they'd actually get around to me. So that's not a big issue. And the overriding response from the Satanist community is positive beyond anything I ever expected. They like to know everything about their religion, and I give them an aspect of it that nobody else really does. So I was quite surprised that they enjoy going to the page and enjoy, you know, all the films and stuff I have up there. And, you know, I'm happy I have a following, even if they're Satanists.
Wow, that's something you never hear. Think you'd hear somebody say.
I know, isn't it? It's a very strange thing.
It's kind of like me. Hey, at least I have some women that are interested in me. They're all psychotic and want to kill me, but there's people that are interested in me.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm not, that's who I get my feedback from, is a lot from Satanists themselves, who actually many of them appreciate the full scope of Satanism that I show them. No one puts their bad foot forward in any religion, but as I said earlier, I think they should.
Well, you know, Bill, I'd also like to thank you for killing off any Wiccan female fans that want to have sex orgies and be interested in me tonight. That pretty much
well,
is out
know,
the window now.
You know, have a few more shots of NyQuil and hit a bar, and maybe you will, you know? That's what I'm going to do.
Bill, thanks for being a part of our show and coming on here. That's great, and I appreciate it. Now, Bill, you said you like our show. Have you ever actually listened to the show, Bill?
Yes, I have. I listened to the show.
Was it part of your research for Satanism?
No,
part
no,
of the torture?
I'm into cryptozoology, so I listened to the Destination Truth show.
Oh, okay.
The other day, and I have heard two or three of your other shows because you guys tend to get really top-level paranormal scholars on your show. You know, a lot of these, I don't...
Yeah, Tim calls them and books them and tells them it's going to be on Coast to Coast AM, and then we just call in and they can't say no at that time.
Gotcha.
Well, that's all right. That's George Norrie won't notice. He doesn't.
George
but
who?
No, I do. I have listened to 4 or 5 episodes of the show, and I really like you have good guests. Great guests, and you handle the show well. So,
well, thank
yeah.
you very much. We appreciate that. And you are one of the great guests, and I appreciate you spending your time with us this
and
Sunday
And the
night.
Check is in the mail.
That's right.
Very yeah. good. Thanks for having me on, David.
We've got 2 minutes left here. What would you like to share with us about this book? What would you like people to take away from this and understand more about?
Well, simply that Satanism and the occult is really saturating our culture. And all you need to do is go to a Blockbuster Video and walk along the new releases wall, which is at the perimeter of the building, and just count how many satanic and occult DVD covers you can count. You'll be astonished. There's tons of them. And just cyber surf on your TV and you know, pick out as many satanic and occult symbols that you see as you flick your station. You know, you'll get Sabrina the Teenage Witch, then you flip over, you'll get Charm, then you flip over, you get a rerun of The Craft, you know. So I guess we're being saturated with occult images anyway, so I think people should learn as much about them as possible. Cause they're being
well, as long as they keep wrapping them up in Rose McGowan and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The hot ladies of, The
Hot Ladies of Wicca calendar.
Yeah, we'll take that. I'll accept that notion.
I would accept a date with Ferusa Balk. I have to admit,
yes.
Wicca or not, I dig Ferusa.
Yeah,
she can have any religion she wants.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much, Bill. I hope everybody will check out your website again. It's WilliamHKennedy.com, and there are links there to your other branch off pages. Correct.
Right.
And the book is available off of your website as well.
Off my webpage or Amazon, right.
All right, and we will put you in touch with Chip Coffee so you can use him for your follow-up book with the stories about the Beatles and the occult. Mr.
Very
Kennedy,
good.
Thank you for your time this evening.
Bye-bye now.
All right, take care, sir. And thank you all for tuning in to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'll be back with more.
Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
When it comes to broccoli salad, Ohio, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. Everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows that tangy zip. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip in all your favorite recipes. Buy now and get your tang on, Ohio.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.